Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. While the debate and legal issues surrounding gay marriage continues to make its way through the U.S. court system and the court of public opinion, in many other parts of the world, a more fundamental battle exists for gay, lesbian, transgendered, and bisexual individuals. A battle of decriminalization, acknowledgement, and acceptance. My guest today is a part of that struggle in India, where recent legislation overturning the nation's anti-sodomy laws were reversed, in essence, making gay behavior illegal once again. Prince Manvendra Singh Gohil was a recent guest in Tulsa and has been an outspoken leader in the fight for gay rights in India. A member of the royal family of the former princely state of Rajpipla in western India, Prince Manvendra created an uproar in traditional circles in India when he publicly spoke about his sexual orientation in 2006. To this date, he is the only member of the Indian royal families and one of the few in Indian upper classes to reveal his homosexuality. And perhaps with good reason. The prince was disowned for a time by his family and burned in effigy throughout Rajpipla. Today, he works as an activist, working to change India's laws and attitudes towards its GLBT community, and works through his Lakshya Trust on HIV prevention and education. He was recently here in Oklahoma to network with HIV activist groups, and we spoke with him while he was here. Prince Manvendra, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Here in the United States, as you well know, we've had a tremendous swing in public opinion, most of this in just the last 10 years in regards to acceptance of homosexuality and acceptance of gay relationships. While there's still opposition, that shift in public opinion has occurred. Is anything like that happening in India today?
Yes. Well, in India, what had happened was that after HIV started spreading in our country, we saw a lot of empowerment amongst the gay community. So I would say that HIV was a blessing in disguise, that the post-HIV epidemic empowerment amongst the gay and the transgender community started happening, because that's when a lot of organizations started forming to work for the gay issues, and the government started taking interest, and they started funding us and supporting us to help the spread of awareness and prevention of HIV amongst the homosexual population.
Now, even as little as maybe 15, 20 years ago, homosexuality was just not talked about in any sort of Indian society.
True.
Give us a sense of how that veil began to come off.
Actually, homosexuality has always been existing in our Indian society since centuries
now.
Yeah, everywhere. And if I talk about India, we have got one of the oldest sex encyclopedia called the famous Kama Sutra, which was written even before Jesus Christ was born. And it has got a whole chapter on homosexuality and showing various sexual positions which a gay couple or a lesbian couple can enjoy. Apart from that, we have several centuries-old temples which are openly depicting homoerotic form of statues and sculptures. But it was the hypocrisy in our society and the influence of various religions like Islam and Christianity that reduced the issue of homosexuality being openly discussed, and that's how it went underground. And it's considered taboo. It's not spoken about much.
Now that's obviously changing. What do you attribute that to other than HIV prevention?
Well, I would say, I would of course not take the credit to my own self, but yes, definitely my coming out did make a difference. Because if people from a high society come out and openly speak about themselves, about being gay, then it does make a difference. And basically, my coming out was instigated by the hypocrisy in India had reached to that extent. So I decided that my coming out will open the Pandora's box, and there will be discussions and debates, and that way people will try and understand us.
You also burned an effigy, too.
yeah, true. So I think we all need to undergo a lot of struggle in our life in order to bring about any kind of social change, whether it's homosexuality or it's HIV or any other thing.
You said it wasn't talked about in India, but when it was discussed, it was considered a condition of class.
Yeah.
So if you were in the lower classes, this was something they might do.
Yeah.
So it was like a cold slap in the face to people who thought in that way when you came out.
True, because there is this misconception that if you're an upper class, you can never be gay. because they always related to your upbringing, your cultural issues, and your status and all that. And that was also one of the reasons why I came out, because never before has somebody from a royal family come out and told that he is gay. So it was a tight slap on this matter, and people realize that you don't have to be from a particular class to be gay. Everyone can be gay, irrespective of your caste or anything.
Now, your family had known for several years. Give us a sense of your background. Did you know it all your life? Mm. Did you try to deny it? Did you try to closet yourself? What happened in your own life?
Well, I belong to a 650-year-old dynasty, and I'm the 39th direct descendant. And as I was growing up, I used to hear from my parents' mouth as well that so many people within the royal families have been gay, but they always been misunderstood. And they would tell me, oh, the following king is a transgender. And I would wonder, how can the king be a transgender? I've never seen him in drag, you know. I've never seen him in female attire. And when I grew up, I realized that they would mean he is gay, but it was always misunderstood. So homosexuality is rampant in royal families. In fact, I would go a further step by saying that homosexuality was encouraged, or rather patronized, during the time of my ancestors' rules. And we have evidence on that. And that's the basis we take when we are fighting for gay rights in our country. And yet there is so much of hypocrisy that people still don't want to accept this fact that it existed in our society. And they think it's an import. Rather, I would say it was an export from India to other countries. Yeah.
I think of India as, like the United States, it is very religiously plural, mm-hmm. although it's dominated by two large sects,
yes.
Hindu and Muslim.
Muslim,
I know it's it's very much not tolerated. Mm. Is there any sort of sense of toleration in Hindi?
Yeah. Well, Hinduism per se was not the speaking against homosexuality in any form. None of our texts or anywhere it's mentioned that clearly, as it is mentioned in the Islam or in Christianity, that it's a sin. On the contrary, we have gay gods and lesbian goddesses. In our Hindu scriptures, there have been various references in a lot of our texts, or ancient texts, about gay characters. And we also have a goddess which is worshipped by the transgenders in our country. And she is a mainstream goddess, I would say, because she's not just worshipped by transgenders, but she's worshipped by a lot of other people in the society. So given all this fact, Hinduism was quite tolerant towards homosexuality.
Has the interpretation of it, though, changed after 600 years of mainly Muslim rule and then Christian rule under the British?
Exactly. So it was after we were impacted by the Islam into our country, like with the Mughals. And then the major drawback came during the British rule. When Queen Victoria was ruling India, that is when this law came into force, which directly penalized the homosexual act. Mm. And that was the downfall of homosexuality in our country.
Now, I've read that, say, in the mid to late 20th century, that law was pretty much not really known anymore.
Yes, yes.
But it was still on the books.
Exactly. I mean, there were a lot of laws which were imposed by the British. And when we got independent in 1947, a lot of them were discontinued. But there were some laws which still continued. And this was one of the law which was enacted somewhere in the 1860s. And it still remained in our country as an anti-sodomy law, in spite of the fact that this law has been misused rather than being used in our country. And misused in the sense there's been a lot of police harassment, that we are trying to encourage homosexuality where my people have been distributing condoms for safe sex behavior. They have been exploited, blackmailed, tortured, and even police has gone to the extent of even having forced sex on them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So this law has been brutally misused than being used at any point of time. And yet it was continuing in our country.
But eventually it has been repealed, right, at 2009?
Well, in 2009, we managed to win against the government of India to decriminalize homosexuality. And this case was so well argued that our own law minister made a statement on the national television that this is the best argued case in the history of India. But however, in 2013, that is last year in December, this law was challenged in the higher court, that is the Supreme Court. The religious leaders of our country, they all got together and they appealed to the Supreme Court that this the wrong decision has been made, and we lost the case. So now we have, it has been reversed, and we have gone back 150 years, you can say.
Oh, my goodness. My guest today is Prince Manvendra Singh Gohil. He is here in Oklahoma to network with various groups, including HIV activist groups. He also leads the Lakshya Trust, which works on behalf of Indians with AIDS, as well as in HIV prevention. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Take us back to 2006 when you publicly came out. You had been married at one point.
Yes, yes.
So you said it was a pretty much a sham marriage. You knew it was bad, but that was what was expected of you. You had a nervous breakdown in 2002.
Yes.
And I believe your one of your doctors disclosed to your family that you were in fact gay, and but they kept that quiet.
Right.
In 2006, you said, I have to come out.
Yes.
What led to that decision?
I think I was living a life of a lie, which was going against my principles and philosophies of life. I've always liked to be an honest person and a true person. And being born in a royal family, there was a lot of pressure and expectations from the people, from the next in line, because they wanted to see the next, the 40th direct descendant in this this old lineage and this family. So there was a lot of marriage pressure coming on me, not from my, just from my family. Even though my family knew I was gay, yet there was a marriage pressure. They thought that maybe my marriage would change me. That was happening. And then I had started an organization called Lakshya Trust in the year 2000. And there were a lot of problems happening in that organization. I was not happy with the way people are not just accepting themselves, but even there's a lot of hypocrisy in HIV/AIDS, in homosexual issues. So all that burdened me so much that I thought that the best thing would be to declare myself in the open and to tell the whole world that this is what I am, and I'm not doing anything wrong by being gay, which is absolutely normal and natural. And that was the purpose of coming out.
You mentioned an idea that in many Indian families where someone is gay, it's an awful lot of shame.
Yeah.
Just the fact that 75% of them are still married gives us a sense of where that is.
Right.
Do you feel like that you're coming out maybe made more people say, okay, this is who I am and there's nothing wrong with it?
Yeah, definitely. I've been getting a lot of emails and letters and correspondence from the government community who say that they have got inspired by my coming out. And they felt the need that they should not get succumbed to the marriage pressures, which normally our parents, they always try to emotionally blackmail the children and force them to get married, even after knowing that they are gay, because they think that they cannot complete their life unless they complete their duties of getting their children married. So because of that, statistics have shown that 75% of our gay men are heterosexually married to women. And that by that, they spoil the life of the woman. Their life itself is not satisfactory.
Well, they're living a double life.
Yeah, exactly. So that makes women even more vulnerable towards HIV, because the woman doesn't know the husband is gay. If he gets infected by his boyfriend and he doesn't have safe sex with a woman, then he infects the woman also. So there are a lot of challenges, and we are working on these issues. In fact, my organization works on the issues of the married gay men, and we have also managed to counsel some of the wives who know about their husbands, and we are using those wives as our peer educators to counsel other women.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. How is that working out? I mean, the idea of involving not only men who might be gay, but also their wives who are in this relationship, and actually using them as peer counselors.
In fact, ours was the first organization in India to start working for on the women issues. Though when we started, we thought we only work for men. But when we realized that there are so many of us who are married to women, and some of the women started coming to us and telling us, well, we have come to know that our husband is gay. How do we deal with the situation? And that's how it started. And we did a whole study on the issues of the married gay men. And we even submitted a paper in the International Conference of HIV/AIDS, which was held in Bangkok. in the year 2004. And we found some very interesting facts which have come out. In fact, there was a documentary made on national television on this subject, and where we interviewed some of these wives. And I was there in the for the interview, and I've heard some very, very interesting things coming from the wives. Some of the wives were kind of positive. They said, well, we don't mind if our husband is gay, but they would mind if the husband went to other women. Because number one, she was feeling secure that so long as the husband is going to another man, he can't make him pregnant. And even there was a financial security, because they know that gay marriage is not legal in our country. So even if he goes with other men, it doesn't matter, so long as she's kept socially and financially secure. In fact, there have been stories coming where some women have even tried to patch up between the husband, gay husband, and his boyfriend when they fought. So, you know, she comes as a peacemaker. So some of them have really kind of accepted their husbands. And we encourage them that, and given the situation in India, it's always better to keep the marriage alive, when you have, especially when you have children, rather than breaking up and make the life of the woman miserable.
Now, children, that's also been an issue in your life.
Yeah.
You're trying, I know you were trying to adopt a child. Has there been any success, or have you been turned away on that?
Well, in my case, adoption is not for my own self, but it's for the carrying forward the 650-year-old family lineage, so that the next in heir takes over the custody of the rich cultural heritage which we have inherited. And adoption need not be a child. It could be a grown-up person. It's usually from the extended family. And as of now, my father is still there. He's still holding charge. So it's too early to take the decision in his presence. It's after that I take over charge from him that I will decide what has to be done.
Now, what was the reaction from your family to you mentioned that they knew several years before you publicly came out. What was the reaction when you did come out?
Well, they had to accept it because I was already in the hospital suffering with a nervous breakdown. So the doctors tried to convince him that there's no other way. Of course, their first reaction was a stage of denial. And then after I was released, they took me to all kinds of religious leaders trying to influence them to influence me, that I should become normal, in quotes. And
right.
That also failed. And they even thought of sending me abroad if there's some treatment could be done or some mental shock therapy could be given to me so that I change. But they realized that nothing is working out.
Eventually, you had a rapprochement with your father?
My father is in talking terms with me. My mother still believes that she's a very hard nut to crack, as I would say. So she still is not ready to accept it. But I guess I have to give her time to decide.
You mentioned the fact that you had this great success when India repealed the laws against homosexuality.
Yeah,
then it was overturned in the Supreme Court. What was the reaction to that overturning? Is there enough of a movement, a gay movement in India to go to the streets and protest?
Yeah. In fact, the number of support which we got after the law was overturned was much more than the one when we initially got freedom. And when I say support, it was just not from the community, but even support from the non-community people. In fact, we had a very successful pride just recently in the month of January in Mumbai, where we had a huge turnout, almost close to 1,000 people on the streets. And a lot of people were without masks, even given the fact that the law was reversed. But still, people were confidently marching. And a lot of support was seen, especially from parents of the gay children. There were a lot of people from Bollywood, a lot of influential people who were walking in the pride. So that went to show that there is support.
You mentioned the parents of gays.
Yeah,
so one
yeah.
of the, I think, the big changes
yes,
in this country
exactly.
has been organizations like
PFLAG.
It's
similar to PFLAG. Is already the movement has started in India. In fact, even now when the Supreme Court judgment is being challenged, there is a review petition filed. There was a curative petition which has been filed recently, in which the parents have joined hands with the gay activists to repeal or change the verdict which the Supreme Court has made. So that's a very strong point in our favor.
You mentioned Bollywood. I've heard and read that really Bollywood is sort of like Hollywood was in the 1950s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, nobody's gay in Bollywood.
Yeah.
Quote.
Yes,
gay.
Yes.
Is that maybe the next step? I mean, you're a member of a royal family in the principalities of India. You've come out. Is this the next step? Is for some actor or actresses that beams into their homes on a regular basis to say, yep, this is who I am?
Yeah, it's bound to happen. I mean, it's already happening in some of the lesser known people in the Bollywood. They have come out and they've said, we are gay. And that's helping a lot of them. And I mean, helping a lot of the community. But you're very right in saying that there are a lot of gay who are in Bollywood, but still there is a bit of stigma because they feel that if they come out, then their fan following will get reduced or, you know, they have some of these issues. But I think in the given times to come, as we progress and as our activism and the movement gets stronger, I'm pretty sure there would be some of them who would kind of like to come out and talk about themselves.
Give us a sense of the amount of discrimination, everyday discrimination in India today.
Yeah.
Is it necessary to be closeted pretty much on the job, in your sort of interpersonal relationships on a daily basis?
Yeah. See, I am a trained counselor. I've done a lot of counseling for the gay men. And a lot of times I get calls and emails coming from the community that they have been discriminated at various places and various times. For example, even if you're living in your house, in your neighborhood, people kind of doubt your sexuality. Then the neighbors start talking about it. Their landlord starts interfering in your personal day-to-day life. Even at workplace, there's a lot of discrimination I've seen. Sometimes you don't even get promoted because they think that you don't have a family, so you don't deserve a promotion, even though you may be hardworking. And so there's been discrimination happening. We have fought some of the cases wherever they have come to us. We have a legal panel. We have a human rights activists are there who you are fighting for these kind of cases if they are willing to do that. So there is discrimination at various levels. Even at the home front, there have been cases like, for example, in my own case, where I was disowned by my parents and even disinherited from the ancestral property. So those kinds of discriminations are also happening.
Now, that was a symbolic disowning because I understand under Indian inheritance laws, they can't do that.
They cannot, yeah. It was illegal, in fact.
But still, symbolism of it,
yeah.
It had to have, you know, must have just been a knife to the heart. It really was.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I wasn't kind of discouraged. Their idea of disinheriting me and disowning me was that, you know, I would stop going to I will feel disheartened and lost and lonely and go into depression. But nothing of that sort happened. The fire within me was so strong that I kept fighting even in spite of all these things happening.
So what are the next steps in India towards the acceptance of homosexuality? Is it getting this law reversed?
Yeah. See, we are doing our best that we go legally through the Supreme Court. A very good thing which has happened just 2 days ago is that the curative petition which was filed in the court, in the Supreme Court, which is the last resort to kind of change the verdict, has been accepted by the Supreme Court. And we had requested the court that there should be an open hearing of this case rather than having it in the judge's chamber, which has normally happened. And that is also accepted by the Supreme Court. So keep the fingers crossed. We are hoping for the best in that case. But simultaneously, we have also started our advocacy with policymakers, with the politicians, the parliamentarians, the religious leaders, wherever we have found that there is homophobia or there is the people are not understanding or there's misconceptions. We have parallelly started making strategies where we can talk to them, and we talk to those politicians who have started accepting us so that they can go and talk to their other colleagues and try to make them understand that they should accept us.
India has been internationalizing over the last 10 to 20 years,
especially
a lot of Western companies see India as the next great market.
Right. Yeah.
Has that had any influence? Because
definitely. That's another very important issue. There are a lot of multinational companies in India which have changed their HR policies towards being gay-friendly. So that's a very big step, and which is helping us. In fact, we also do a lot of advocacy with the corporate sector, where we kind of have workshops and we try to explain to the corporate staff and the executives about homosexuality and also about HIV. And we are trying to change their mindset. We are trying to get the support from the corporate sector, from some of the industrialists. And some of them, as you rightly said, they're at a competitive disadvantage
against multinationals.
So they have a lot of influence from the international world. And then we are trying to get them to kind of accept us.
It sounds like it's important work, and it's sort of daunting at the point where you are in the struggle.
Right.
Very quickly, the Lakshya Trust.
Yes, you've
sort of spoken about some of the things they do as far as the closeted relationships,
yes.
But really the main thrust of it is HIV prevention
for the most part. Well, we started Lakshya Trust to create a platform for the gay community to come together and to discuss their issues and thereby solve them. And then we started off working for HIV prevention and awareness amongst the gay and the transgender population. We work in three cities in the state of Gujarat, which is in the western part of India. And we have reached out to almost 25,000 gay men in these three cities over the last 14 years, where we are providing them free counseling, treatment for sexually transmitted infections and HIV testing. And we provide them a safe, comfortable space for them to meet up. We have organizing events. A lot of advocacy programs are being held. So there are a lot of activities happening. And now we started also working on the mental health issues and the aging issues for the elderly gay community. And, of course, for the transgendered.
Mm. Now, you're serving your own one state out of many states in India.
Yes.
Is there a national organization that's doing that?
There is one of the largest networks for the sexual minorities working in India, which is called InfoSEM. The full form is the Integrated Network for Sexual Minorities, which consists of around 160 organizations which are registered as either trusts or societies exclusively working for the LGBT community. And I'm on the board of that network. In fact, I'm the Western India representative for the gay community. And we have not only just the gays, we have the lesbians also included in that who are working as part of this network. And collectively, we are trying to fight these issues on the national level.
Now, are those organizations hurt by this law?
Definitely.
I mean, because basically you're in essence breaking the law by having the organization, at least not literally, but...
Exactly.
You know.
In fact, we are worried about the HIV because so far we have managed to control the epidemic spreading. But this law, after having reversed, is going to... impact HIV. It's an obstacle to HIV control in India, which was even mentioned by our former health minister in one of the conferences, international health conferences. And that's our major concern because, as I told you earlier, the misuse of the law by the law enforcing authorities, which is causing us a lot of problem. There'll be a lot of people who are indulging in unsafe sex and there will be no control whatsoever. And I just have that concern.
All right. Well, Prince Manvendra, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Prince Manvendra Singh Gohil of India speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He was the first member of the royal family of the former princely states in India to come out as gay and today works as a gay activist and works on HIV prevention and education issues in India. He was here in Oklahoma to network with local HIV activist groups, and he spoke with us while he was here in Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.